This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. This week, Donald Trump traveled to Texas to take in the extensive damage from Hurricane Harvey, but his visit sparked criticism. Many people say his appearances sounded like a political rally rather than a show of support. Meanwhile, Congress is set to vote on a multi-billion-dollar relief bill for Harvey victims, and the president still wants the funds for his border wall. He's threatened to let the government shut down if he doesn't get it. North Carolina Congressman Mark Meadows says he'll oppose the upcoming budget resolution if it includes higher spending for the wall. All that plus the battle over the protection of undocumented immigrants continues, and North Carolina Republican Senator Tom Tillis has a plan for DACA recipients. Ken Rudin is the political junkie. He's been watching all of this and much, much more. Hello, Ken.
Hello, Frank.
How can you watch much, much more? That's plenty, don't you think? Let us start with Donald Trump in Texas and the complaint that he made it sound more like a political rally than any kind of giving support for people who are in distress.
Well, he did. I think that's fair to say that. I mean, when he came, he went to Corpus Christi, where the floods have not been nearly as severe as Houston and Beaumont, things like that. But when he got there, he had that speech, you know, what a crowd, what a turnout, like, you know, great TV ratings. And people roll their eyes and say, oh, no, Donald Trump, not now. Don't do this now. And then on Twitter, he kept saying, wow, exclamation point. This is epic. You know, it's like a prize fight. I mean, it was just. But and then, of course, there was a lot of focus on Melania Trump's 6-inch heels when she was walking to the helicopter, I guess, or the plane to go down to Texas. But having said that, I think the government's. They certainly learned a lesson from Bush and Katrina back in 2005. I think they've certainly made sure a lot of the FEMA experts or the members of FEMA from the Bush administration are working with Trump. And I think, by and large, they're doing a good job of that. But having said that, I mean, on the first night of the storm, I mean, the Trump pardoned Joe Arpaio, which was not a good sign. And I think he went to his New Jersey golf club. It wasn't until 4 days later when he even went to Corpus Christi. And I think the big complaint is, and again, this is not so much about the government, more about the president, but there's a sense that he did not show the kind of empathy. Like, he didn't meet with residents who were suffering or things like that. And it just felt like, you know, I mean, look, the president is going back to Texas tomorrow, and we'll see what changes. He's going to Houston tomorrow. But right now, it seemed more about, you know, great crowds, great turnouts, and great rescue efforts, but not that much empathy, at least the way I saw it.
Well, and also then Donald Trump claims to have witnessed Harvey's devastation firsthand, meaning he saw it on a TV screen, and that caused a bit of an uproar.
Well, that's exactly true. I mean, when he said that was the weirdest thing of all. When he said that, I saw firsthand the horror and devastation of what Harry did. But of course, he didn't. He didn't see anything like that. And when Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the White House press secretary, was asked about that, she said, well, he did see it firsthand because he spoke to people who were on the ground. To me, that's not the definition of firsthand.
By the way, the president didn't say Harry, you just did, but it was Hurricane Harvey. That's okay.
Harvey, I'm sorry.
That's perfectly okay. And in fairness, Melania's high heels were on the way to the devastation. When she got there, she changed her shoes. All right, we'll get that all cleared up.
Doc Ashame, thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about the stopgap spending measure, because here, North Carolina Republican Congressman Mark Meadows plays a key role in the stopgap spending measure, which comes up by, we have to have something in place by the end of October, the wall and funding for Harvey.
What? End of September,
I should say. And so, therefore, this is a big deal, because now we've got to spend more on Hurricane Harvey relief. We're pretty sure that's going to happen. President says, I want my wall, and I'll let the government shut down if I don't get it. Mark Meadows says, I don't want your wall, at least if I have to pay any more for it.
Well, what he's saying is, I think what the majority of the Republicans are saying, this is not a time to be demanding. First of all, the fact that Texas and the region and Louisiana need the government more than ever. The thought of Donald Trump shutting down the government, which, of course, the Republicans control the House, Senate, and the White House, the thought of the Republicans shutting down the government when government assistance is needed more than ever, I just suspect that's not going to happen. I know all the rhetoric about the wall and how know, Congress has to fund it or else. I think that, I mean, that's certainly how Trump feels, but sometimes reality intervenes even with Donald Trump. And when you have such a thing of devastation, even, I mean, it's so devastating that people have been calling Hurricane Harvey Hurricane Harry. And that shows
how disorienting it is.
Unbelievable.
It is. And here's the other thing. I mean, it does mean more spending. And I think probably everybody's aligned on that. But it does raise the question, you know, when this sort of ideological question. And again, I think you put your finger on it. Republicans have traded heavily in and succeeded greatly by demonizing the government and faceless bureaucrats. Those faceless bureaucrats are people who work for FEMA, who are on the phone every day organizing, you know, communications, connecting with state and local authorities and getting plans together in between these disasters. And when it comes time to need the government, this is the thing we all need. And the rubber hits the road, and suddenly Republicans are saying, well, there's parts of the government, of course, that we should give more money to.
That is an excellent point. And let me make two follow-up points to that. One, the Trump budget that the Congress is about to vote on, I think as early as next week, it included an $876 billion cut from FEMA. Now, of course, that's not happening now, and there'll probably be more money from FEMA. But this is the mentality of what people think about government. We're going to cut nearly $1 trillion from FEMA because ideologically that's what we should do. And then I think of the lawmakers. So I hate to play politics with Harvey because this is, of course, I mean, this is just unimaginable horror what's going on to these people. But here's where the politics plays in. The Republicans from around the country, but mostly from Texas, when that Hurricane Sandy hit New York and New Jersey in 2012, everybody, Ted Cruz, John Cornyn, all the Republicans in the House from Texas, they voted against that funding because obviously there were no Republicans in New Jersey and Texas and New Jersey and New York. And they made the argument, well, there's a lot of extraneous money in that bill, which was nonsense. Matter of fact, Chris Christie called Cruz a liar this week. But for all those Republicans from Texas who fought against money for Hurricane Sandy in 2012 are suddenly saying, oh, my goodness, we need those billions of dollars to rebuild Texas and Louisiana. And they do. But they certainly played politics with it back in 2012.
Let's turn the corner here and talk about DACA, because this is another deadline that the president faces, though it has far fewer headlines. The Trump administration has to make a decision on DACA, which gives some privilege and protection to the children of immigrants brought to this country. It protects immigrants brought to the U.S. illegally. Attorneys general from 10 Republican states have said you've got until the end of this month to end this DACA program or face a legal challenge. The president has indicated he kind of likes it, some sympathy for those who are brought over. So tell us about this.
Well, I've seen, yes, the president has talked about sympathy and regarding the kind of signal it would send by deporting the 800,000 or so people who were brought here as kids, as undocumented immigrants who've now, you know, stayed in the country ever since. But there is a growing suspicion that as soon as today, although who knows, I think, look, Hurricane Harvey has changed so many calculations about the budget, about the debt ceiling, about all the things in Washington. They may do something about DACA, too. But there is some indication that the Trump administration could end as soon as today the DACA plan, because the Trump administration, just seems to want to undo everything the Obama administration did and the deferred action for childhood arrivals, which is DACA, which was done by the Obama administration 5 years ago. But as you point out, there are some Republicans like Tom Tillis, the senator from North Carolina, among others, who are saying, well, maybe we could protect them. I mean, if they work, if they pursue higher education, if they serve in the military, maybe we don't have to. We can keep these people here. And there's a congressman named Mike Kaufman who represents a mostly Latino district in Colorado, a Republican, who has offered a bill that extends work periods for those who are under the DACA program right now, and it would halt deportation for 3 years. So, given the fact that so many people, exactly in the DACA program, are in Houston alone, and there's so many people who are undocumented in Houston, and you see pictures of them working side by side, rich and poor, white and black and brown, all together trying to accomplish this as one country, the thought of now saying, well, you know, let's end protection for these kids or these former kids is just, is just, you know, lacking compassion. And I think Republicans know how that will play at the ballot box.
And the interesting thing about the Tillis proposal is that it seems to allow Donald Trump cover. He can say, I eliminated DACA. You can eliminate DACA and replace it with this other bill that offers a pathway to citizenship and pretty stringent rules about how it is you can stay here.
That's exactly right. Unlike the health care bill, which never seemed to have an alternative to Obamacare, what Tillis does gives the president at least, sure, let's end DACA, but let's put the Tillis bill up. Let's put the Mike Kaufman bill up that would protect these kids, these people who are here on the DACA program. Let's just not call it DACA anymore.
Hey, I've got about 30 seconds left, but Joe Arpaio, you mentioned him earlier, pardoning the ex-sheriff who violated the constitutional rights of Latinos in the Phoenix area.
Racial profiling. Absolutely.
Racial profiling found by the courts unconstitutional. This is categorically different than other pardons given by presidents because we're talking about constitutional violations, not just legal code.
Well, firstly, I think we all agree that the president had the right to pardon Joe Arpaio. But what a lot of people in Washington are talking about is that the pardon to Arpaio is a signal to others who may be others involved in the Russian collusion story, that if they're talking to Robert Mueller and talking about working on a plea deal with him, Trump is saying, look, I pardoned Joe Arpaio. I can pardon you, too. Don't make any deals with Robert Mueller.
Not to mention police brutality cases that could, should they ever find their way to a jury in this country, could be overturned by a presidential pardon. So the message that it sends is certainly far-reaching. Ken Rudin, always a pleasure. The Political Junkie, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Frank.
Just ahead, we preview the podcast that features stories from Japanese-American intern camps during World War II. We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.